Very lucky to have my guest this morning, Dr. Carol Lieberman. She's a board-certified Beverly Hills psychiatrist, along with an award-winning author, best-selling author, trained at NYU Bellevue and Anna Freud's London Clinic, and one of our guests this morning. First off, Dr. Lieberman, good to speak with you this morning, ma'am. How are you?
Thank you. Fine, thank you.
You know, I knew there was a word out there for it, but I didn't have one. I knew about compassion fatigue. But crisis fatigue is very real, and it's seemingly all around us at this point. It's an accurate term. Well, it'd be more accurate if we had another F word in front of it, because I think that's how frustrated people are.
Yes. Yes, this is the new pandemic that we're having, crisis fatigue.
It's everything, isn't it? Coronavirus, forced lockdowns, the murder of George Floyd, protests where you see people beaten and racing, riots, looting, toppling of historical statues. Maybe your job is influenced in here, but it's a hairball.
Yes, actually, I give 10 symptoms that are indicative of crisis fatigue. And the first one, the most basic one, is that everyone, you're feeling overwhelmed, and then when you wake up in the morning, you're still exhausted, even if you were lucky enough to actually fall asleep.
And we also have these, and I thought your term, spurts of raw feeling, was in particular accurate.
Yes, you know, being generally emotionally numb. But when we do have feelings, you know, they kind of come rushing out. And the most prevalent feelings are sadness and anger. You know, sadness for what's going on in the world and, of course, anger about it, too.
We have a tendency to eat, sleep, and drink a little too much.
Yes. Then also berating yourself with feelings of failure and guilt. Helplessness, you feel that nothing, you know, things that you would like to try to fix, you don't feel like you have the energy to do it.
One in particular, when you talk about this, it steps out to me is pessimism. And I seem to see that a lot is in different forms, but usually encapsulating the term, when will this be over?
Yes, you know, especially now because it seemed like we were heading towards the end of it, or at least, you know, we're starting to open up in many places. And then now, of course, starting to close down again in many places. So there's a feeling, will this ever end? And then one of the ones that I think is interesting is self-destructive behavior. I mean, we know about people overindulging in comfort food and getting the COVID-19, 19 pounds. And then some people, of course, are overindulging in alcohol, and some people are using drugs. But what's interesting is self-destructive behavior in terms of relationships or work.
And, you know, this one line here where you talk about that you think you won't be able to survive. I actually talked to a woman who's not been in the presence of another person for somewhere around 3 months, says she literally feels she cannot walk out the door. She's tried. She can't do it. A family brings groceries, leave it in the garage. She says, I dressed, I wanted to walk, and I can't do it because they don't think they'll survive.
Yes, you know, now it's not only being afraid of walking out the door and meeting a coronavirus, but walking out the door and meeting a rioter or a looter or, you know, and being afraid that one or the other is going to get you.
You know, when you talk about this, Dr. Lieberman, what I hear also are the words, and the reason why I mention this is in conversation that I had with the Grief Recovery Institute, that grief and depression are words that cover a lot of ground here, but I don't know that they're sufficient to the task, and that's why the term crisis fatigue interests me. I'm curious about this because when you see these things on TV and on social media, people being beaten, fires, looting, monuments toppled, you know, and the constant coronavirus, that these reactions in many ways are normal.
Well, yes. You know, of course. We're losing, I mean, you know, it's a reaction. Well, the media from the day one of coronavirus, the nonstop message on the media was, we're all going to die. I mean, they didn't necessarily use those words, but that was the message. And so, you know, yes, of course, we feel the loss. We feel grief over what's been happening. And, yes, I feel, in addition to coronavirus, when I see some of these, I'm originally from New York. And so when I saw some statues toppled in Manhattan, you know, statues that I grew up with, of course, it is really a loss. As things that you just kind of counted on, and attacks also on the flag, attacks on the national anthem. Of course, it's a loss because you know, these are things that we had pride, and we hope most Americans still have pride in, and to have them demolished and desecrated, and it's very painful. It is like a death.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If you looked at these things and saw them in the way that they're delivered today and you weren't affected, you'd probably be a sociopath, you know?
Right.
And here's the thing. You know what I find interesting is some people are suffering from the things that you are talking about, Aaron, we just talked about, and they don't recognize it in themselves. It's just that, you know, and so you've got to come to some kind of self-awareness. And people do. They suffer like this, and then one day the doctor says to you, do you think possibly you're depressed? And you go, wow, never occurred to me, doc. I mean, sometimes those doors open. So we know that it's normal to see this. So very often I think that happiness is just the absence of grief and depression, really. Are there ways of dealing this or, at the very least, achieving some kind of balance?
Well, yes, we really do have the ability, everybody, to try to mitigate some of this and to make ourselves, put ourselves in a better place, at least a lot of the time. The first thing is to be compassionate towards ourselves. The second thing is to take a breath and to realize that even though this is different from our usual, the usual way that we are, which is, rushing 24/7 to get things done, achieve our dreams, and so on. And of course, we need to achieve our dreams. That gives us a reason for living. But we need to realize that during this crazy time, that the priority we have to give is to ourselves and our loved ones, to keeping ourselves healthy, physically and psychologically healthy, that this, you know, to put aside some of the other things that we usually concentrate on. And then, of course, not watching the news 24/7. Basics, you know, to keep ourselves healthy, like even when there was just coronavirus to worry about. If the idea is to make your immune system stronger so that if you do come across the coronavirus, that you are able to withstand it. So the basic things like eating healthy, taking vitamins, getting enough sleep, getting enough exercise, those are things we should be doing all the time. And then every day we should add a stress-relieving activity. We all have heard of these, from aromatherapy candles to listening to New Age music or classical music, calming music. Putting on louder music and dancing in the living room. Then one thing that people don't really realize is super important is making sure that we have at least an hour of laughter in our day. I know it's very hard to laugh when there's all this chaos going around, but we can do it. If you have kids, you can watch cartoons with your kids. You can watch romantic comedies, any kind of television show or movie that will make you laugh. And then, of course, social support, being more reaching out, you know, phone, Zoom, and all of that to your friends and family, and volunteering in some way, whether it's a food pantry or some other way. And then, of course, the main thing is if you're having any of these symptoms, and particularly if you're feeling suicidal, if you're feeling like, I don't want to live anymore in this, if the world is going to be like this, I don't want to live anymore. I mean, that's kind of an unfortunately increasing feeling that people are having. People who, you know, never felt suicidal before or that depressed before, but just looking around at the world and thinking, you know what, it's not In other words, it's not that there is something personal in their life, like a breakup or something, that is, you know, making them feel suicidal, but just looking around the world and thinking, this is, I don't see the end to this, so I think I'm going to have to end me.
And we've been seeing this, and what's unfortunate is we can't get a real handle on it because suicide numbers have a tendency to lag. I mean, if you went out right now in Illinois and looked, the freshest stuff you get would probably be 2018. But we know what's out there, and especially when it comes to drugs and people.
Well, you know what? When lockdown happened the first time, the way that they were able to tell that was there was an increase in suicides was there was an increase in calls to suicide hotlines. Now, of course, that's a good thing, you know, a good thing to actually reach out for help. But certainly that also means there's an increase in people who are completing the suicide.
All right. Dr. Carol Lieberman's joining us this morning. Final before I let you go. I think this is important, Dr. Lieberman. I'd like to hear your opinion. As an adult with kids in the house, they look at you and see how you're reacting to what's going on. Crisis fatigue response at some point is very feral and baked into our DNA when we see another human being in distress. But how we deal with that, kids learn by observing their parents and grandparents and family members, and how we react in front of our children is a legacy that they live with for the rest of their lives.
Yes, that's very, very important. The most important is you can't tell your children that there's nothing to worry about or that there's nothing bad happening, and then they see you crying or, you know, covering yourself up under the covers, not getting out of bed. I'm not saying that you should, you know, frighten your kids and say the world is coming to an end, but first of all, you need to talk to kids about all the things that are going on in language that is appropriate for their age and their psychological state, maturity. But you do have to be honest with them, maybe not, you know, revealing the extent of how you're feeling, all of these different things we've been talking about. But you can't, like, lie to them because they can see how you're feeling. And if you pretend you're feeling some other way, then they are more scared because they can't trust that you're going to tell them the truth.